That's don't like me. Okay, so once again, good morning or good afternoon, everyone, wherever you're coming from. Welcome to today's W3C Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force call. This is Monday, December the 2nd. Let's get started with the housekeeping items. IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any credentials, community group work items must originate from members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. You can find the link to this in the meeting invites. You will need to have a W3C account. That is also something easy to do online. Now moving on to call notes. Please note that these meetings are recorded. We have a robot transcriber, and we also make audio and video recordings that are archived and available online on GitHub. If you want to speak, please either raise your hand or add yourself to the queue by typing Q plus in the chat. And please be brief. If you have a question to ask, we want to maximize the time for conversation. Now to introductions and reintroductions. If we have any new people in the call or somebody would like to reintroduce themselves, please feel free to take the floor now. Okay, I see that the transcriber just doesn't like us non-Americans. Great. Okay, if nobody is eager to speak about themselves, then another question is anybody knows about anything that's worth announcing or reporting about, any reminders, anyone has any events or things that happened that people should be aware of? Again, please queue yourself up and share the news with us, or alternatively, you can also leave links and comments in the chat. Okay, so looks like everybody was busy having an excellent Thanksgiving. All right, then we can move on to the main agenda topic. That is basically the continuation of the discussion that Carrie started via email, and we also had our last meeting about multilingual credentials and achievement subject areas, etc. The way we would like to approach this, we reflected on this after our last meeting with Anthony Camilleri, whom most of you probably already know or remember from former times of the task force, is how we interpret multilingual credentials and how our European learning model is documenting subject areas of digital credentials. So we thought it would be worth reflecting on these and just to show you through a couple of examples how this is tackled by us. So I have a few screens lined up, and this is the kind of presentation that is not going to be a presentation. We haven't prepared any slides or anything, so it's just to continue the discussion, as I said. And if you have any questions or reflections, this is what we should do. Now I just have to find the share screen. But somehow, okay, excellent. Found it. Okay. And Anthony, please, by all means, jump into it if I misinterpret something or if you have something to add, which I'm sure you will. So just to get started, what the way we do the language representation of a credential is the example 40 in the VC specs. So nothing quite unusual about it. Basically, wherever we have values that can be multilingual, those values in our model are represented as language script strings, and they are by default multilingual. And what it would look like in the JSON code is we would have any kind of pref label or description notation, anything, and that would have the various language versions. So if it's a multilingual credential, a pref label could be in various languages, but in other instances, there could be credential titles or descriptions, and those would also have or could have various different language versions. This also kind of gets us to the way of interpreting the language. During our last call, there was this comparison of the related achievement. Semantically, I believe we could say that something that is available information in multiple languages is a very different phenomenon altogether than something that is can be likened to something available in a different language. So it's slightly different, but this is how we do the language. And the way it looks like in our credentials, if we have, I prepare the digital credential that is multilingual. When you have a micro-credential, for example, from its preview image to the individual content, you could switch between the content languages. If there were more than two, then you would see a longer list of languages. The European Learning Model currently supports 29 languages that are used across the European Union and some other countries. So as we switch the language, you will be able to see that the title changes, the all the other text content changes. And also when you look at the deeper content of the credential, you will see that information about the volume of learning or the qualification framework level or credit points, etc. They are also switching from one language to the next. Staying with English would be probably more meaningful so that you can actually see what we are talking about right now. So, Anthony, what have I not said about languages? Please take the floor.
No, I think you said most of it in terms of how we do it. Maybe just a couple of considerations about, let's say, why we chose to design things like this. Now, first of all, when we talk about a multilingual credential, we are assuming that you have the same credential that is being represented in multiple languages. So you're not representing, let's say, achievements that are similar, each one being a different language. You're really representing the same achievement in multiple languages. And in the European case, the main use case for that really is that, first of all, several countries in Europe have more than one official language, so you need to produce multilingual credentials. If you're in Luxembourg, it's even three languages. Secondly, you have certain documents, like diploma supplements, which are given to every graduate in Europe automatically on completion of higher education studies, which say that it has to be produced in the national language and at least one other widely spoken language. Second thing we needed to consider, because another way we could have done this is, let's say, defining a lot of things in the context file, is that we have kind of about 28, I think, approved languages. But typically, any credential might use between one and, let's say, three of those. So the language combination on each one will be slightly different for each credential. Third thing we needed to take into consideration is that not necessarily every property in the credential will be translated. So you might have, let's say, certain the most important properties which are translated across the languages, but then other ones are not. So for this reason as well, and let's say we use a special class we call display properties for this, we also kind of define what the primary language is in the credential. And that kind of allows us to say, look, this is kind of the source language, this is the primary, and then everything else linked to that is a translation. Last thing to say, using this, let's say, concept, this way of doing it in JSON-LD also maps very nicely to the way languages are dealt with in RDF, and kind of that's, let's say, that's taken all together is why we chose to do things like this.
Dimitri, you have a question, you're queued.
Yeah, so I just wanted to double check that I understand correctly. So you're translating both the contents of the field and the field label?
Oh, no. We do not translate the field. Well, in the data model, we do not translate the field label. We do, but that's in the CMS. It's not part of the model.
Got it. Okay.
Understood. And actually, the entire model, what you're seeing here, is our data model browser. So the field labels stay the same, but we actually provide a translation of the descriptions in every one of those 28 languages.
Got it. So it sounds to me that we here at VC Edge, are dealing with now three different translation and internationalization model. This one, the related field that OBV3 uses, and the VC2.0 data model approach. So that'll be interesting to juggle.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. So I was just going to say that, like I mentioned before, and I may have misinterpreted something that we discussed with Anthony earlier, but we are actually very much following the VC spec for our use of the language mapping. Anthony?
That doesn't seem to be the case, just looking at the code.
So there are some slight differences between the way it's done. As far as I can tell, it's mainly though in terms of that we're not including a language context in the field yet, and we define the languages slightly differently in the context. But generally, I'd say it's quite close to the VC2.0 approach.
And as I mentioned earlier, and I was just looking for something to demonstrate it, that several of our properties in the European learning model have Langstring expected values, which means that these titles and descriptions can be supplied in multiple languages. But I don't know if this is giving any additional information or irrelevant.
Carrie in the chat is asking, can you paste the link to that JSON view into chat so that we can record it?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sure. This
and
is
how do we?
Yes.
How do we get from this link that you're on right now? How do we get to the JSON view?
The JSON view is what I was showing here.
Yes. How do we get to that?
We don't have this particular one online, but we have a code.europa repository where we have example credentials. The multilingual one is currently pending approval from the European Commission, but I will give you the link to what we have published already. And these are signed and unsigned credentials mixed. We'll definitely make sure that we have a multilingual credential here, but any one of which you open, for example, this Annex 1 compliant sample is the same as the one that I have showed you. It's just this version is only in English, and this version I created for this particular call.
Wonderful.
Basically, the code would look the same, except that there will be only one language, but you can see how it would be different if there was an array of more than one. Okay, and the other, if are there any other questions or comments on the language? Okay, Phil has a question about the pref label having an array. And Carrie's in the queue. Anthony, can you answer Phil's question? I might have an answer, but I'm not sure if that would be the correct one.
Honestly, it's because we have a developer who's a little bit too fond of arrays, and it's probably something we're going to fix.
That's not what I would have said, but that's, I'll go with this. You're the expert. Kerry?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was just going to say that I'm just going to spend a little bit of time. The reason why I'm not asking any questions, I just want to spend a little bit more time reviewing the JSON-LD. I think overall I need to have a better understanding of ELM anyway. It's about time that I picked up on it. So I'm going to take a look. Ilduka, would you mind replying to our email thread, though, with some information like that so others can have that?
With the greatest pleasure, Kerry.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Okay, well, since we're talking about multilingual and properties and the ongoing discussion, another thing that we wanted to bring to your attention is how we are interpreting the subject areas or fields of education, as we call them sometimes. So, for example, in ELM, what we call the education subject property, it is, if I remember correctly, it would be a string value in the OB spec. What we have in the ELM is it's a concept, and to use a controlled vocabulary to express the education subject, we use a well-established existing taxonomy. This is UNESCO's ISCED field of education taxonomy. There is no link to the controlled vocabulary in this version of the application profile, but in the next one we're about to release soon, you will also be able to see when there is a recommended or compulsory list of concepts that the users are recommended or required to use. So, for example, if you want to determine the language of a credential, you can only choose from those 29 languages. So that's restricted, and it has to be a language. And that comes from the European Commission's Publications Office website or portal. I can also paste the URL of that to the chat. So this is our common European skills data space. We are managing a bunch of controlled vocabularies here, and some others like list of countries, list of languages are curated by the publications office directly. And this collection of taxonomies and code lists are expressing certain aspects like accreditation type or status, assessment type, assessment mode, learning opportunity type, etc. Everything you see here is actually a multilingual list, and these lists can be used to supply values for these various concepts. So, for example, the education subject, like I said, would be the ISCED list. And I can just show you what that list. This is the International Standard Classification of Education. And if we check this vocabulary, we have a nice description. This is also available in RDF format, etc. And here you will see multilingual, and then we have the various broader subject areas, and then the narrower and the detailed areas of subjects. This is a very well established and widely used taxonomy in Europe. So instead of asking people to determine a subject area by a simple string that people can come up with and misspell or not present in linked open data format, in European digital credentials, this is a concept that is automatically available in multiple languages. So we kind of eliminate the human error from the system. And when third parties viewing our credentials, they will be able to see these concepts in whatever one of those languages, 29 languages, they want to. So this is just a convenience for the European implementers. And this applies to various other concept type properties, such as language, such as type, such as for the learning settings, such as the various national qualification and European qualification framework levels, mode of learning, etc. So this is just something else that we wanted to bring to your attention, how we are approaching the thematic area part of the credentials. And when we are thinking about how to determine the majors and the minors, that is, again, probably it would require a semantic level conversation, because first we need to know how we define the major and the minor, since our credentials could be by default stacked. I have another credential lined up here. This is a transcript of records that has a whole bunch of subjects that are part of the main master media culture degree. And depending on how you want to determine the references to the subject areas, you can either do that on the high level and just determine the subject area on the main claim, achievement claim, which is this master media culture, or this single main claim could have various sub achievements that are a part of it. And every single one of them might have its own individual list of related thematic area or related learning outcomes with the related skills, which again can be ESCO skills or any other. And these are also multilingual concepts from a very well-known European taxonomy of knowledge, skills, and competences. Here I pause again in anticipation of Anthony's additional comments or remarks and any questions that might come and come after the topic.
And the only thing I would add is I would just, this issue of major and minor is quite interesting, because I mean, major and minors aren't a thing everywhere in the world. So there's a lot of variations of this concept. So I would be very, very hesitant to think of including a specific property for major and minor. It's kind of like, if you can imagine it, somebody has structured their degree program like it. So having a way to describe kind of types, relations, and put names to those would probably be a more future-proof way of doing things than just, you know, explicitly looking at majors and minors.
Thanks. Sorry, I'm also typing to Carrie. And because the transcriber doesn't pick me up, I would like to make sure that this goes into the minutes. So to Carrie's question, we don't have a default language. We have the 29 languages. And as Anthony mentioned earlier, it's really up to the issuer which of the provided languages, if the credential has multiple languages for the content. This transcript of records only has English, but this micro credential, as I showed before, has two. It could have three or up to 28, 29. But once you determine the primary language of the credential, which again could be any one of these 29 languages, you can add additional languages up to 28, but your primary language is determined and it can only be a single language. Carrie?
Awesome. Thank you. And I guess the labels are English, though. They are always in English.
Oh, yes. That's another beauty here. So the issuers are able to provide multilingual content, but the platform, the EDC viewer itself, is multilingual. So when you want to consult the credential content in any additional languages, you can select your language of navigation, which will change. As you can see here, you will be able to see the context of the various parts of the credential in your navigation language. In this case, it's Spanish. If you go back to the English content, you will be able to see the learning outcomes, further information about the achievement, and all the labels here would be your chosen navigation language. But the content is displayed in the primary or secondary or the chosen language of the content. So you can kind of combine the two depending, because some of the concepts are translated if they are concept types, but others will only be available in the manually supplied form that was supplied by the credential issuer. This language selection for the navigation is really just a convenience for the third-party credential consumer to interpret whatever content they see.
Nice, thank you. May I ask another question about how the system works? It's kind of unrelated, but it is related. You probably covered it in another call, and I may have missed it. How does this work with wallets, with, like, say, mobile wallets, like independent mobile wallets? Are they required to sort of follow the same methodology that you're doing here in the browser with, like, language and display and such? How is that working with ELM?
For the moment, we do not have our own development of an EDC wallet that is mobile friendly. I don't know how the rendering would happen in any external wallet, but I believe that the JSON itself could be, or the JSON-LD, sorry, the signed credential could be stored in more wallets than just the ones that the European Commission supplies. And we know that there are implementers in Europe who are using our open source code to customize and develop their own wallets. But I know this is probably not even a partial answer. So, Anthony, if you have any additional comments on mobile wallets or expectations or visions. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, part of me wants to say next question. wallets are a little bit complicated at the moment in Europe because at the moment we are in this phase where something called the EUDI wallet is being developed. The EUDI wallet is essentially a kind of government issue wallet that will be able to take verifiable credentials as well as the, is it MDL, the mobile driving license type credentials as well in like a government supplied wallet. At the moment, what is being developed is called an architecture reference wallet. And then based on that architecture reference, every country in Europe develops their own version of the wallet in line with the common standards. So because we're kind of, you know, in the end, a government-led project, the wallet we are working towards, it will be connection with the EUDI wallet first. At the moment, honestly, there isn't a lot said on the how it will deal with languages. It isn't in that level yet. But, I mean, what I can tell you is that, let's say, for most, let's say, government websites, having this, this is quite a kind of generic, it's not a standard, but it's a common practice where we would have data and labels kind of separated and have translations for both. So if you go, you know, on multilingual government websites, this is a very, very usual way of having data done and presented. So my assumption is that we'll have something quite similar, but honestly, I can't tell you for sure any either way, because we're probably about a year and a half out from the first UDI wallets hitting the market.
Hmm. Okay. That is really interesting to know. I bring it up, and I don't want to hog the call, I'm sure if other people have questions, is we have the Learner Credential Wallet at the DCC, which is open source, and we have a lot of European members, in fact, mostly European members, or majority anyway, and would like to sort of integrate with what you are all doing. Maybe I'll just catch up with both of you later and see how we might be able to do some of that on our end too, okay?
That would be amazing. Looking forward to that, Kay.
Thanks.
And that's actually how far we got with what we wanted to cover. And Anthony and I were hoping that along the line there would be some additional questions, such as the EUDI wallet, such as other aspects of the European learning model or the issuer or the viewer service or tool. So by all means, if you have any other comments or questions, we still have loads of time, and let's maximize that for feedback and additional questions. Of course, Carrie.
I'll just keep chatting if you don't mind. I have a question for like actually the prod group. On the email thread where we've been talking about multilingual credentials, I believe it was Manu who said, hey, why don't we just use bots and let's not worry about how all the different standards are handling, handling multilingual credentials. So I was curious as to what people think about this. I mean, I have concerns about that. I think it will happen anyway. I'll just say that I have concerns because, you know, they're not so readily available, they're expensive and such. But I was just curious to hear what others think about that approach to multilingual credentials. My thinking is that it probably accommodates us putting the content in and that, you know, we probably should issue the credentials in the language of the earner. But yeah, I'm just curious what others think about this.
I think you're first in queue.
I think I'm next on the queue. Yeah, so I'll hop on. So I think I agree with you, Carrie, that I too have concerns about this. I don't think that's going to be the default approach to translation internationalization, because especially for high-value credentials like diplomas or professional certifications, the probability that a bot will mistranslate is very high. Issuers will have a lot of incentives to make sure they get the translation exactly right and sign off on it. So my recommendation to issuers would be, especially the value of the field, don't auto-translate, but translate once. Use one of these three internationalization options and sign off on it. If anything, I could see using bots to translate the labels of the field, but not the content.
Yeah, I think so too, to be fair. Like, shouldn't the actual content of the credential that's expected by the earner of the credential be signed as part of the credential versus translated by an outside source?
I couldn't agree with you more, Dimitri. Also, in Europe, this could be quite a sensitive issue because the terminology can be very precise. I showed you before the controlled vocabularies that we offer to our credential issuers, and even just the translation of those very simple terms that are standalone words really resulted in a lot of conversation between translation experts, humans, how to translate certain aspects, the blended and the hybrid, the, like, don't get me started, the list is endless. And the same, since we're talking about AI, not only for translation, but another thing that we are considering is to support the interpretation of a course description or an achievement description to identify single or individual learning outcomes and related skills. And that itself as well is something that is probably not going to be as straightforward as anybody could imagine. A crude translation to support the individual to provide a vetted translation, yes, but definitely not there yet with automatic translation. Anthony, you were in the queue as well.
I'm going to agree with everything everyone said so far, but I think there's one more argument which you need to put on here, which is, I mean, honestly, using bots kind of go against some of the basic principles of signing things. At least for me, one of the very, very basic principles is you see what you sign. Of course, if you're relying on a bot to translate after the case, you're not seeing sign, so that's another big one.
I think Anthony or Phil Barker is next.
I'll go since I think Anthony just spoke. I think there's more to issuing credentials in multiple languages than translation. Scotland is a multilingual country. Scots Gaelic is important to many people within Scotland. And so it's important to them and that community that the credentials that are relevant to Gaelic speakers in Scotland, those that are spoke through, those that are issued through a Gaelic, sorry, those that are taught through a through Gaelic medium, that those are issued in both English and Gaelic. And it's not a question of translating from one to another. You know, the two languages are equivalent, and the credential is issued in both of them at the same time. Besides, I agree with everything that's been said about the difficulties of translating. I can't imagine what accuracy you'd get translating from Scots Gaelic to Hungarian, for example, since we've seen examples in Hungarian.
All right, I think I'm up next. So I just realized that I think it was either early last year or the year before, we had a call here at VC Edu going over the concepts of internationalization and localization in general. So I want to paste the link to those slides here, just in case it might be interesting to people. Now, this was before we had examples both from OBV3 or from the European Learning Model, so it doesn't go into the details of those. It just discusses the plain VC 1.1 and 2.0 approach. But as I see from the example, the next steps there, our next to-do steps for ourselves were lots of examples. And now that we've got three different approaches, we'll want to document all three and give guidance to developers on how to implement each. Go ahead, Carrie.
That would be an excellent work item for VC Edu, I think. Just a recommendation to the co-chairs to come up with even just one or two, like, models that are doing the same things in each different approach so that we could all sort of look at them together and compare and see how we should either develop, I don't know, libraries or and such to help understand all of this in our applications.
Indeed, and furthermore, this has been in my head ever since we started the micro-credential schema mapping, that we have these broader, that was a very good starting point, but we barely scratched the surface, right, Phil? And I think it would be so important to A, be aware of these differences and B, somehow offer some kind of a translation device, no pun intended, between the various interpretations of the various models, like how one might define and use in context evidence or subject area, and maybe highlight where there are discrepancies, the pros and cons, have a little bit of an analysis of the historical justification of going one way or another, advantages, disadvantages, whatever, because it could be very useful for those who are just starting out to make informed decisions about how to move forward and to have an understanding of whether, if at any point, true interoperability between these models can be realized. Because I think that's the final goal or the ultimate goal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do want as much interoperability as possible. The more I do this work, the more I realize that there's always going to be like a few ways of things, the way things are happening, and that possibly we just need to build libraries that will understand those few ways. I think we are heading into a space where it's going to be a while before there's any sort of like, you know, true similar standard. I mean, everything is like close enough. that we can build around it, I think, as long as we don't keep adding to it, you know?
Yeah, just another note to that, that we do know that there are initiatives already that are working on converters and mergers. Like at the last WannaTech conference in Barcelona in October, we had a workshop about how to create a single artifact that would validate both an open badge and an EDC. I know that there are projects in Europe. Anthony might be able to tell you more about them. That are working on converters. I think we have the efforts the right places. How efficient and effective they are, that's another question. I'll unearth the link to Chavi's, or the Chavi's in the call. He might even have at his fingertip the...
thank you. We comment that workshop in our one of our open batches meeting. And I think the link of the slides are in the running agenda notes and also in the WannaTech community site. So yeah, it's publicly available. So for those of you, the idea was to express both types of credentials via the type attribute of the JSON-LD credential. So the same payload contained both representations of the same data, one in open batch following the open batch for a specification and the other following the EDC, Japan Digital Credential specification. We found some collision points that we are trying to sort out. Yes, illegal. It's the, that link in the chat points to the kind of repository with an example payload. So. So yeah, and any feedback and help and continue working on that, it's encouraged and highly appreciated, because especially if we think about the student having the same credentials in two different formats, means that the amount of data they had to manage in their worlds will be insane. And having them using the same space, let's say having one credential item in several formats, I think it will be helpful for them.
Thanks, Chavi. We've done quite well. It's 46, so... If you want to finish early, that's obviously an option. But if there are any further questions, needless to say, as Carrie said, the email thread is ongoing. So feel free to sleep on it, digest it, send another email to the thread, and we will be in touch. And also this recording will be published soon on GitHub as well, so you can re-watch the recording if you wish. Okay. Any other business from Anthony?
Hi. So this is a completely different topic, but I thought it's something the group would find quite interesting. UNESCO organized something called the World OER Congress in Dubai a couple of weeks ago. And typically this is, you know, a big conference where you look at government policy on open licensing. One of the things which they put into the declaration that has come out of Dubai is that for the further development of open educational resources, they didn't quite use the word verifiable credentials, but what they said was they want to support the development of linked open data technologies, as well as cryptographic signing, semantic-based interoperability, and machine learning to improve attribution and discoverability of OER. And that was also, let's say, accompanied by a few presentations at the conference on how verifiable credentials could be used for OER attribution. I'm going to paste the link to some of those as well. That is correct. So that is the link to the declaration. And then this is kind of from one of the workshops where we were showing how verifiable credentials could use this. So kind of now this is in a UNESCO OER, you know, World Declaration. I would assume that, let's say, verifiable credentials for attribution of OERs will be something you'll be hearing more about in the coming months and years. That's all.
Thank you for sharing that. There you go. And some news from Carrie as well. And thanks for the other link, Simona, also. Okay, do we have any other businesses or remarks or further questions? Going once, going twice. All right, then. Thank you very much for your attention and your time. And let's continue the discussion via the email thread. And we'll see you next Monday, hopefully. Have a nice day, evening, depending on which part of the globe you are. Bye-bye. Hila, you're welcome to speak while some of us are still here.
Sorry, I was trying to clap.
Oh, you pressed the wrong button. That's fine.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.